I'm reading from a choice collection of very valuable prefaces, lectures, and sermons preached upon the mountains and muirs of Scotland in the hottest times of the late persecution by that faithful minister and martyr of Jesus Christ, the Reverend Mr. James Rennick. This is sermon number 9 in that collection. The text is Zechariah chapter 2, verse 8. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, after the glory hath he sent me unto the nations which spoiled you. For he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. That's Zechariah 2, verse 8. Beloved friends, they make a right choice who choose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than judgments with his adversaries. For the Lord afflicts and chasteneth his people out of love, but he plagues his enemies with wrath and indignation. He, by the afflicting of his people, doth purpose their correction and amendment, but by punishing his adversaries he purposeth their overthrow and destruction. The afflictions of his people are light and momentary, but the judgments of enemies are heavy and everlasting. They may begin in time, but eternity shall not put an end to them. The affliction of his people turns to their glorification, but the punishments that enemies meet with here are but forerunners of the wrath of God that they are liable to and shall meet with to eternity. But to come to what remains in the words, you may remember, at least some of you, how I showed you the connection of the words, which in some it was this: there is here a vision represented to the prophet, that is Jesus Christ, with a measuring line in his hand, whereby is signified his purpose of building his own church and setting bounds to her. And hereupon he gives an angel a charge to give Zechariah a commission to declare the meaning of this vision to the church, which was that the church should be enlarged and possessed as a town without walls, and also to make her mercy complete, he promiseth to the church safety and protection. I will be a wall of fire round about her. And this is applied to several sorts of folk. For first, it is applied to those that remained at Babylon and deserted the work of God and their brethren, and is made use of as a call to them to come and join with their brethren in the building of the house of God. Here they are exhorted to flee from Babylon and from the land of the north, and to deliver themselves out of it, as from some eminent and great judgment. And there are three reasons made use of to enforce this exhortation. First, which is couched up darkly in the seventh verse, deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon. And in the sixth verse, ho, ho, come forth and flee from the land of the north, saith the Lord, for I have spread you abroad, as the four winds of heaven, saith the Lord. Yea, the reason is this: ye ought to flee out of Babylon, because ye were scattered abroad as an evidence of his displeasure. And therefore ye should not be content to lie in that case whereunto they were cast in anger. Come forth, flee, for I have spread you abroad in mine anger. The second reason is because they have had the name of Zion. It was very unseemly for them that possessed his name to dwell in Babylon. The third reason is in the words read, because he was coming to punish enemies. Therefore it would be very sad for them to be found in enemies' camps. This is enlarged in the following words, verse 9, for behold, I will shake mine hand upon them, etc. Their judgment is pointed out to be both sad and sudden. It will be a very ignominious stroke for their very servants should become their masters. The words were divided into five particulars. First, that Jesus Christ is the faithful interpreter of the Father's will. Second, that he is sent of the Father to see his will executed on the nations. Third, the time That is after the glory. That is after the Lord had visited his people with affliction, or after his glory was manifested in the begun restoration of his people, which is his glory. Then Christ was sent to punish their enemies. Fourth, there is the cause why he is sent to punish the nations, and it is because they had spoiled his people. The fifth, there is the reason moving him to this, which is brought from his sympathy with his people. He that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. The first particular was handled, and the second a little touched, wherein I showed that as Jesus Christ is the Father's messenger to his church for their redemption and salvation, so he is the Father's messenger to his church's enemies for their overthrow and destruction. And he, being employed as the Father's messenger to punish the heathens, is used here as a reason to enforce this exhortation that is given to the Jews, that they should come and leave Babylon, because he was coming to punish the enemies of his church. And therefore it was very hazardous to be found in their camps. And so he exhorts them to flee from Babylon, as they would flee from a great plague and imminent judgment. And now I lay down this doctrine, that it is very unsafe for the church of God to be found in enemies' camps, or living under their shadow in the time when the Lord punisheth his enemies, lest they be made partakers of their judgments. This doctrine I confirm from 2 Corinthians 6, 17 and 18. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. And I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. For as it is in verse 15 and 16, what concord hath Christ with Belial, and what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? Revelation 18:4, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. There is a charge given that they should not comply with nor partake of the wicked sins, as they would not be liable to their plagues. For people who join with enemies any manner of way expose themselves to the greatest hazard. The Jews who were at Babylon thought themselves in a securer condition than those who were at Jerusalem, because they were environed about with the strength of enemies. Yet their case was very hazardous, for a cloud of God's wrath was ready to break forth upon them if they continued in that case that they were in, by staying in the enemy's camps. And this was used as an argument to bring them out, that they were to flee out of Babylon before the Lord brought his judgments upon Babylon. The greatest part of this land thinks that the remnant, who desire to keep themselves from joining with enemies in less or in more, expose themselves to the greatest of hazard. But believe it, a little time will make it appear that as there is least sin in their way, so also shall be least hazard in it. O, whereunto shall I liken adversaries and compliers with them? Adversaries are like a great tree sending forth great branches and boughs, and compliers are like a company under that tree resorting to it for safety. But what comes of it? The Lord drops down a drop of his wrath from heaven upon it, which consumes the tree, and it falls, and the weight thereof crusheth all under it. So enemies never get a fall, but all that are under their shadow get a great crush, for they are like a wall built up with untempered mortar, and such as flee in under the shadow of the wall shall be crushed by the fall thereof, when the stormy wind from on high rents the wall and brings it to ruin. And believe me, friends, the day is near when woe and calamity shall be seen to abide them that are to be found amongst enemies' camps. And the farther that people are from their sins, the farther they shall be from their plagues. Now, for the use of this doctrine, I shall give 8 sorts of folk warning of their sin and danger. The first sort of folk to whom I would give warning are those who join with this Romish prelacy. When God comes to punish enemies, they shall find the weight of his hand. I may allude to that word in Hosea 10, 14 and 15. Therefore shall a tumult arise among thy people, and all thy fortresses shall be spoiled, as Shalman spoiled Beth Arbel in the day of battle. The mother was dashed in pieces upon her children. So shall Bethel do unto you because of your great wickedness. Your idolatrous Bethels that now you go under for safety shall bring down sad judgments, woes, calamities, and vengeance upon you. Jeremiah 9:15. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I feed them, even this people, with wormwood, and give them the water of gall to drink. For the Lord hath many articles of indictment against you. First, he hath idolatry to charge upon you. Concerning this, I may allude to that word in Ezekiel 22:3, the city maketh idols against herself to defile herself. Believe it, sirs, the Lord will find you chargeable in his sight with idolatry, for it is not God that ye worship, but man. And it is his acts and laws that ye obey in hearing the curates. But ye will say they take their text out of the Bible. But they may as well take it out of the Acts of Parliament. Second, he hath covenant breaking to charge against you. And shall ye prosper? Shall ye escape? Or shall ye break the covenant and be delivered? Ezekiel 17:15. Remember what ye are engaged unto by covenant. With uplifted hands to the Most High God, that is to extirpate popery, prelacy, and whatever is contrary to sound doctrine and the power of godliness, and that to the utmost of your power. How contrary to this is it to comply with prelacy and other sinful courses, which are breaches of covenant and a betraying of the cause of Christ to the utmost of your power. The third article of your indictment is bloodshed. He will find the blood of the saints in your skirts. Hence is that word in Ezekiel 22:3, the city sheddeth blood in the midst of it. And that word in Jeremiah 2:34 also, in thy skirts is found the blood of the souls of the poor innocents. I have not found it by secret search, but upon all these. The blood which enemies have shed will be found in your skirts, that comply with enemies when God comes to make inquisition for the same. Ye who justify enemies in shedding of blood and say it was but folly to stand out against such courses and to resist unto blood, remember what is said in Jeremiah 5:29, shall I not visit for these things, saith the Lord, shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? Oh, believe it, sirs, that this displeasure, that his displeasure is against such courses which people are sinfully following for safety. He will not let such ways pass without writing folly upon them. But remember that he hath no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that he would turn from his wicked ways and live. O, therefore, turn from your wicked ways. Why will ye die, saith the Lord? The second sort of folk that I would warn are these who join with the Erastian indulgency, of whom it may be said, as in Isaiah 29:13, and their fear towards me is taught by the precept of men. Indeed, the Lord will have the same articles of indictment against them that he hath against other compliers. And therefore remember what is said in Ezekiel 23:32 and 33, thus saith the Lord God, thou shalt drink of thy sister's cup, deep and large. Thou shalt be laughed to scorn and had in derision. It containeth much. Thou shalt be filled with the drunkenness and sorrow, with the cup of astonishment and desolation, with the cup of thy sister's Samaria. The indulged shall drink of the cup of their sister prelacy. The Lord will put the same cup in the hand of the one that he puts in the hand of the other, for the Lord hath the same articles of indictment against both. Oh, remember this and turn to the Lord, for why will you die? The third sort of folk to whom I would give warning is peacemakers with enemies. Remember what is said in Isaiah 57:21, "There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked. Yet though there be no peace from God to the wicked, yet ye will be at peace with them, and will not lift up your hands against them, but will go on with them in their evil courses. Therefore, as these who break wedlock with God and shed innocent blood are judged, so will the Lord judge you. He hath in the articles of your indictment rebellion, bloodshed, and perjury to libel against you. Therefore return, O backsliding children, to the Lord, for he is merciful and will not keep his anger forever against such as repent and return to him." The fourth sort of folk that I would warn are upholders of enemies, and under these I comprehend cess and locality payers and all the Erastian indulged. "And by this ye have made the hearts of the righteous sad, and strengthened the hands of the wicked, that he should not return from his wicked way." Ezekiel 13:22. "The Lord will have this to libel against you, the strengthening of the wicked's hands in wicked courses. And when their day comes, that the whirlwind of the Lord goes forth in fury and falls upon the heads of the wicked, then ye will get a sad crush with the fall of these that ye have been endeavoring to uphold. Remember this and return to the Lord, O backsliding children." The fifth sort that I would warn is justifiers of enemies, and under these I comprehend all payers of fines. For such not only strengthen the hands, but also justify enemies, and say that they are wrong, and enemies are right. Otherwise, why should they punish themselves? Why should they wrong themselves so far? This also comprehends all these of all ranks who make choice of their own imprisonments. In the sixth chapter of Zechariah, we read of several horses mentioned therein, and that the black and white horses were sent into Babylon, and the grizzled horses were sent into Egypt. Observe from thence that Babylon, being the place that the Lord sent his people to by his special hand for the punishment of their sins and iniquities, God sent forth there the black horses, signifying thereby the destruction of the Babylonians. After that he sent forth white horses, signifying prosperity to the Jews. But he sent forth grizzled horses into the land of Egypt, signifying a mixed dispensation to the land of Egypt, whereunto many of the Jews went of their own accord, with Johanan the son of Kareah, after the death of Gedaliah. The Egyptians were not punished in pure wrath, as the Babylonians were, but used with a mixed dispensation of judgment and mercy. For proof of this, see Jeremiah 24:5, 6, and 7. Many promises of good things to the captives in Babylon. Chapter 44:11-14, severe threatenings against the voluntary exiles in Egypt. They were far from the case of such Jews as were in Babylon, in the affliction whereunto God had cast in them, for such as choose their own affliction were worse than those who were in the affliction that God had met them with. Believe this, there shall be a visible difference betwixt them that choose their own affliction and those who take what affliction God hath cast in them into. And I comprehend under this such as come from among the enemy's hands by granting bonds of comparence that justify enemies in saying they are so deservedly punished, and enter them not prisoners of Christ, but prisoners of men, with their own consent. Now let this be remembered, which is spoken by the prophet Ezekiel, that by this he strengthened the hands of the wicked, that they should not return from their wicked ways. Ezekiel 13:22. When they are both justified and strengthened in their evil courses by such compliance, O backsliding children, return, saith the Lord, for I am married to you. The sixth sort of folk to whom I would give warning are such as fall from their duty. Zechariah 10:6, and them that are turned back from the Lord. O sirs, believe this, when the Lord comes and pours forth his judgments upon his enemies, these shall not escape who have fled from their duty for fear of hazard and for a safe condition in the world. The Lord will make it appear that that which they have taken to save them from trouble shall involve them and ensnare them inevitably into calamity. The Lord will make them to know His might and His power, and that His name is the Lord of hosts. Oh, the greatest part of this land is chargeable with this. They have turned back from following the Lord and laid aside their duty because of the hazard that attends duties. But believe this, say the contrary who will, the shortest cut to die well is only to live well. And they who know not duty are not so guilty as they who know it and forbear it. They have turned back from bearing up the Lord's standard because of danger in the way. And oh, that people would follow ministers no further than they follow the ways of the Lord. But believe me, the Lord will give such a testimony against lying by from duty upon the account of hazard in the way, that the same courses which they take to decline duty shall involve them with inevitable calamity. The seventh sort to whom I would give warning are these who plead for the enemy's interest and thereby strengthen enemy's hands, that they turn not from their evil ways. Oh, that people would plead more for their mother church, which is so greatly wronged, and for the wrongs she hath gotten, and less for enemies who have wronged her. I wonder what is in people's hearts who have their mouths opened in pleading for a malignant interest more than for their mother church, which is so greatly wronged by these enemies. But believe this, these that plead so much for it shall never be honored to do a good turn for the Lord. The eighth sort of folk that I would give warning to are such as are strangers to God. When God comes to make His justice known, they shall not be unpunished, for He will make no difference between enemies and strangers. Zephaniah 1:6, and those that have not sought the Lord nor inquired for Him. Oh, remember what is said in Psalm 50:22. Now consider this, ye that forget God, lest I tear you in pieces, and there is none to deliver. Oh, consider this, ye that make no conscience of duty in seeking the Lord, but neglect and forget to seek Him. For ye shall be made to drink of the wine of the Lord's pure displeasure, when the whirlwind of His wrath falleth with pain upon the heads of the wicked. O ye that forget God, ye shall not miss His wrath in that day. O will ye believe this, and take warning, and seek the Lord, and remember His exhortation that the Lord giveth you, to come out from among all such as are carrying on in sinful courses, and be no longer partakers with them in their sins, lest ye be also partakers with them in their plagues. Revelation 18:4. Well, come out and be separated, and touch not the unclean thing. 2 Corinthians 6:17. Oh, that ye would take warning and flee speedily from the hazard that ye are in of judgments that are hanging over your heads and ready to fall down upon you when the Lord is coming to make a sacrifice for Himself. Flee unto Him out of wrath's way. O flee from among the wicked. Why will ye be found among their camps when He comes to reckon with them? It is like He will set light by all this, but believe it, time will make it evidently appear that such as are found in enemies' camps shall drink of enemies' cups when God pleads His controversy with this land. But here a question ariseth from the doctrine proposed, which is this: why is it necessary that so many reasons are used to enforce this exhortation to deliver themselves from Babylon? Or why is an exhortation to this so necessary? The reason is because there were such murmurings in them to come that they had a great unwillingness to leave Babylon and to join with the work of God. And so from this I lay down this doctrine, that it is a usual and very ordinary sin in many to neglect the glory of God, that which is their own good. Psalm 53:2-3, God looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand, that did seek God. Every one of them has gone back. They are altogether become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Psalm 14:13, they are corrupt, there is none that doeth good, no, not one. Oh, it is unusual, but an inexplicably heinous sin for men to neglect God's glory and their own good. Well, what are the reasons that men are not bent in seeking God's glory and their own good? The causes why men are kept from seeking the glory of God and their own good are hindered and are hindered from joining with the work of God, whereby their own good is most advanced, are these. First, ignorance of God is a great cause that hinders people from coming to Him and seeking His glory and their own good in Him. For it is said in Hebrews 11:6, he that cometh to God must believe that He is. Alas, God is an unknown God to the most part of men, and therefore they will not seek His glory, join to His work, nor to their own duty, nor seek the advancing of His kingdom and their own good. But believe this, as they that know Him will put their trust in Him, Psalm 9:10, so they that know Him will serve Him, and they that know Him will believe in Him and evidence their faith by seeking and serving Him. The second cause that hinders people from coming to Christ and seeking God's glory and their own good is unwillingness. Jesus Christ hath such to expostulate with in John 5:40, and ye will not come to Me that ye might have life. Oh, what hinders people from joining the work of God? It is their unwillingness. They are so unwilling that they will not come to Jesus Christ in that way that He hath appointed, and therefore will not cordially embrace that which is for the promoting of God's public glory and that which is their own duty and for their own good. The third cause is unbelief. Many believe not that there is a God, and this hinders them from coming to Him. For he that cometh to God must believe that He is. Hebrews 11:6. For without the true belief of His being, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him, and a sin-revenging God to such as despise Him, none can come to Him in a right way to seek His glory and their own good. But oh, if these things were believed, this would not be disobeyed by men. His will would not be disobeyed. The fourth cause why people are so unconcerned with the Lord's public glory and their own good is negligence and sloth, a sin wherewith the most part of men are possessed. For as Solomon saith in Proverbs 26:15, the slothful hideth his hand in his bosom, it grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. This is a great cause why men will not put their hand to the work of God. They are so very slothful. For were there not so much sloth and negligence among people, there would not be so much need of so many exhortations to stir up people to seek God's glory and their own good. The fifth cause is love of the world. For as it is said in 1 John 2:15, if any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Oh, there is such a gladness of heart in pursuing the things of the world that the work of God gets no room in the heart of most part of men. Neither is the enlargement of His kingdom studied by them, because their hearts are exercised about worldly things. The sixth cause that hinders many that they will not put their hands to the work of God is prejudice that they take up at the work. We may see an example of what became of these that took up prejudice at Christ and His cause. For of them it is said in John 6:66, from that time many of His disciples went back and walked no more with Him. They went back at that time because they took up a prejudice at His doctrine. There are many who stand at a distance from the work of God because of the prejudice they take up at it. This prejudice that they take up at it hinders many from putting their hand to the work and seeking thereby God's glory and their own good. The seventh cause, and I shall but name it, is unwillingness to embark in difficulties. This is a great cause, even the unwillingness that is in most part to embark with these difficulties that attend owning of the cause. Proverbs 26:15, the slothful man saith, there is a lion in the way. If there was not an unwillingness in people to embark with difficulties, people would be more ready to put their hand to the work and to study his glory and their own good. But all these are great hindrances in people's way. Ignorance, unwillingness, unbelief, love to the world, negligence, prejudice at the ways of God, and unwillingness to embark in difficulties. Now search and try yourselves, ye that are slack-handed, and ye that are lying by from putting hand to the work of God and to your duty. Search and try which of these things are in your way, and come over whatever hinders you, and put your hand to this work. Study his glory, and this shall be for your own good. For remember what he hath said in 2 Corinthians 6:18, and I will be a father unto you, ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. What a poor bargain do ye make who are in enemies' camps? And what poor company will ye have of enemies when ye and they shall stand before the tribunal of God, and when they shall cry to the hills and to the mountains to cover them from the face of the Lamb and from the presence of a provoked God? What a sad sight will it be to all the wicked when he sits upon his throne for judgment and sets the goats upon his left hand and passeth the sentence of condemnation upon them, and all who walk in the same road with them now will land in the same place with them then. Therefore, as the sheep who are righteous will stand on the right hand then, O separate yourselves from the wicked and join with the righteous now, as ye would desire to stand among them in that day. O, let nothing hinder you from joining with the Lord's work and your duty, your own duty. It is no small privilege that he hath promised to you that you do so. You that do so, that he will be your father, and ye shall be his sons and daughters. O, is it a small thing to be joint heirs with Christ in glory, to be his bride and spouse, to spend eternity in beholding him, in loving him, and praising him? Oh, is it a small thing to have a life of love and joy for your work through eternity, and to be members of Christ Jesus united to the King of glory? Oh, remember what great things he hath promised unto you, if ye will come to him and separate yourselves from all unclean things. Now take him, as he offers himself to be your Father, and to him be praise. Amen.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. You are welcome to make copies and give them to those in need. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. It is likely that the sermon or book that you just listened to is also available on cassette or video, or as a printed book or booklet. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart, from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, I have not commanded them, whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew.